I'd like to welcome everyone to this brand new episode of Talent Talks. I'm your host, Andrew Mitchell, and today I'm joined alongside Dan Hawkins, president and founder of Summit Leadership Partners. Dan, welcome to the show today. Great to have you on.
Andrew, thanks for having me. It's nice to speak with you.
Yeah, of course. Perfect timing for us to get this podcast going with our upcoming conference on private equity, and I know my team is going to have the chance to meet you out there, so really looking forward to that and really delving into this great topic of working with founder CEOs.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm looking forward to talking to you further about it.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, let's start off, Dan. Tell us about your experience working with founder CEOs.
Yeah, well, I guess to begin with, you know, we've Summit Leadership Partners, I'd say probably 60 to 70% of our business is with private equity investors and venture capital investors. And probably not surprising to you, many of the investments that PE and VC makes tends to be in their deal making tends to be involve founders. Mm-hmm. And we've found that working with founder-led companies and founder CEOs, it often can be a tricky scenario to walk through for companies to not only scale the company but also get back their return. So we work I wouldn't say exclusively with founder CEOs, but quite a bit. So I'd also say in my career, I've actually worked, as a former CHRO, I've actually worked for two founder CEOs in my career. So I've have a bit of experience there, but also I'd say probably more recently have worked with many clients that have founder CEOs in place. I'd say probably on a final note, I actually am one, so I formed Summit Leadership Partners almost 5 years ago. So after working with them for 25 years, I became one, and so I could say I'm now, walking a few miles in their shoes.
Yeah.
So I'd like to say that we've got quite a bit of experience there.
Yeah, and that definitely helped you because you definitely were able to learn a lot over those previous years. And did that give you any advantage or any tips really that you were able to transition into, building your own firm?
I think it has, Andrew. I mean, founders, tend to be very passionate people about what they do and what they've, frankly, what they've begun. It's often, their business is like a child. They're often very visionary, ambitious people that identified a some sort of market or customer cause to champion, and we're able to rally resources, people, and eventually capital around. And I think that that holds true even from when I'd say it's very applicable to Summit Leadership Partners and what we've done here over the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that as we'll talk about, there's also some pitfalls from working with founders, and I think while they're very attractive investments for private equity and venture capital, they're also there's some things to consider as you're investing in that company where you're banking on an individual who was there at the beginning, and you'd like them to be there for many years to come.
Yeah, exactly, and that's a really good point, Dan. Now, why are founder-led companies often attractive investments for PE and VC firms?
Well, Andrew, often private equity investors and venture capital investors are goal one, they're looking for great returns. Mm-hmm. And when you look at there's a lot of research out there that founder-led companies outperform publicly traded companies and outperform companies that are owned by other entities. So founder-led companies tend to have track records, but a lot of the great ideas that begin begin with an individual or a few individuals on where there's a once again a market or customer cause to or problem to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And when investors are looking at founders, founders are often great visionaries, very passionate, super ambitious people.
Yeah, exactly.
That having a unique ability. They've got a long-term vision, but have this really hyper focus on with a bias for action, and have the ability to balance longer-term aspirations for solving market or customer needs, while also mobilizing people, making decisions that allow to yield, you know, pretty exciting returns for companies. They, you know, they tend to cut through the bureaucracy and the BS that larger, you know, maybe a larger company or mm-hmm. more established company has historically had in place. And often, especially in private equity believes not only are they injecting capital into the formula that maybe the founders need access to, but they're also providing a degree of expertise and resources. And they're bringing them to the party to help the company scale. So very often the founder is able to, you know, grow this business to a certain point, but to get to the next level, and they need not only the capital, but also, you know, some expertise around supply chain, information technology, M&A, human capital, whatever it may be. So many of these investors think, hey, this is something that I can provide mm-hmm. that maybe the founder has not had access or experience in before. So that becomes the new algorithm for the next phase of growth in the company. And it tends to be it can be a great partnership and a great formula for continued great returns.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Dan. And I like how you brought up the fact that it's, not just about receiving the capital to grow the company, but it's that the guidance from the PE or the VC firm and, any resources that they might have to really help grow the company. Because, you know, like you mentioned, you hit a certain point and, you know, then you're able to use the resources from the VC firm or the PE firm.
And it's really, Andrew, it's becoming a differentiator in private equity and venture capital, because, look, private equity and private capital firms are popping up all over the place. I mean, they're growing. I mean, seems like every week another one pops up. It's a bit of a seller's market because capital's cheap. Yep. Interest rates are fairly low. So if you're a founder and you're looking for capital and you're looking for investors, they're gonna really look for a partner that's gonna bring something different other than just the money. And mm-hmm. so a lot of our private equity clients will come to the discussion and sharing where their expertise is, where they can help the company grow, continue to grow, and obviously in a very partnering way.
Yeah.
So it's not just a financial engineering exercise anymore.
Yeah, exactly, and that's a really good point to have, really, that wraps around this whole idea. Now, where do you see founders fall or tend to struggle the most following a PE investor entering that scene?
Often the founder's able to get the firm, get the company to, I'll call it that first inflection of growth. Mm-hmm. They have the idea, they have the, whether it's a, you know, it's a product, it's some sort of innovation or market opportunity. But what happens is the founder is the catalyst for the growth in that first phase, but there's an inability to scale beyond the founder CEO when he or she stays in place after this large investment mm-hmm. that, you know, takes place. There tends to be this tension between where the founder really has to, it's an emotional decision, has to make it, has to, almost go through a decision-making process, which really involves the fork in the road, creating greater value for their investors through hitting all of their growth goals or hitting whatever the value creation plan is, and start letting go of day-to-day decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
Our experience is that founders have a really difficult time out of getting in the middle of the details or getting in the middle of all of the day-to-day decision-making that they probably had access to and were involved in from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what I said earlier, one of the reasons that founders are successful and become an attractive investment is because they see this long-term opportunity, but they have this bias for action. They make things happen, and then all of a sudden they have another investor and that, you know, there's this, they have to make that, they hit the fork in the roll and in the road of growth or control. Yeah. The other area that we see founders often struggle is just having, frankly, a lot of loyalty to people that were there, you know, probably either at the beginning or close to the beginning of the formation of the company. And, founders are often, notoriously loyal to the team that got them to where they are, and sometimes have the inability to even detect or assess that some people on their team may not be growing fast enough with the company and are not scaling. And so often founders have a tough time, making some of the tough people changes, mm-hmm. maybe splitting up roles into two or three when, someone's wearing too many hats. That's often a difficult decision, a difficult roadblock for founders when they're, where they're growing. And PE investors, they know what great looks like. They know what great CFOs, CHROs, CIOs look like. And as much as they try to convince or talk the founder into making a change or making an investment in a higher grade talent, it's sometimes a tough sell. I think what we've also seen founders struggle with is the degree of transparency that's expected from the new investor, or even leveraging the expertise that the board provides. If you're a founder and you've been running your company for 5, 10, 15 years a certain way, and all of a sudden you have a board that you're answering to, and you're expected to share your financials and your progress on your strategic initiatives, that's just a level of check and balance that they're not accustomed to. And, we've also often seen founders not, and it's not all, I don't mean to generalize, but founders often have a hard time even leveraging, some of the new resources that are accessible for them, whether it's on the board or with the PE's operating groups. So just the willingness to tap into that because they think they've got everything figured out. So yeah. I think those are a few areas. Once again, it's just letting go of day-to-day decision-making, some of the talent discussions, and then transparency and leveraging the investors and the board that's been established to help the company grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those were really all great points, Dan. And I want to bring up the point where you mentioned about letting go of day-to-day roles, and I can only imagine how challenging that must be for a founder to stop doing something they've been doing every day for maybe 10 to 15 years or however long it's been since the company started, and hand it off to someone else from the outside who's maybe not really accustomed to the company yet. And when that transition's going on, do you see sometimes from your standpoint some cultures of companies getting damaged, or kind of is it like a complete restructure of a culture, or do you see some that are remain pretty solid even with the new investor coming in and taking over a lot of the new aspects of the company?
We work with management teams all the time on a topic like this, which is how do we scale and keep the secret sauce in the company?
Yeah.
And often the secret sauce is something like keeping our extreme focus on the customer, agility, responsiveness, not selling out to bureaucracy, empowering people and things like that. And and I think founders who have not worked in big systems before, such as larger companies, I think many times the reaction is as well, that's bureaucracy, that's slow, that it violates our the culture that got us to where we are. Mm-hmm. And there's some truth to that, but I don't think those are mutually exclusive. So what we often work with clients, what we call establishing a new enterprise operating model, which is how do you maintain speed and decision-making responsive to the client, but also do it at a larger scale when your organization may be 2, 3, 4 times the size than it is today. And I do think with, an intentional focus around things like roles, structure, decision rights, metrics, things like that, if that's agreed up front, you absolutely can keep this, that need for speed and responsiveness in place when you become a much larger company. But I think a lot of times, you know, companies do lose their way. And I know it's a common fear that founders tend to have.
Yeah, no, and I can definitely see that. And seeing that quite often with a lot of companies that, you know, we've dealt with who have gone through, you know, some M&As and not really having full control. So it's definitely a challenge for them. Now, Dan, can founder CEOs really change if they have been successful so far? And how do you really get their attention?
Well, Andrew, I'm not going to act like it's easy. I mean, founders, you know, think about it. If you're a founder CEO, and you've been successful enough that you've got a some sort of significant investment from private equity or venture capital, you've obviously done something wrong. Mm-hmm. And so it's really tough to tell, you know, maybe a newly minted multimillionaire or multibillionaire that it's time to change. Yeah. It's difficult. In addition, add on top of that, they've got a huge emotional attachment to the business that they've established and the people that they put in place. And often, you know, there's some overconfidence that, hey, I've gotten it to where we are. No one knows the business like I do. I'm the only one with the vision, the passion. I know the customers. I know the product. I know the people. So I will say it's an uphill climb to get there. It's not insurmountable. What we've found is with when you have a founder CEO in place to get their attention, as you called it, is really not to work so hard to change them into something they're never going to become. So when you try to tell us, a founder CEO has been super successful, you need to be better at this. You need to be better at that. You're not you're trying to improve the weaknesses rather than play to their strengths. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it's a tough sell. It's a tough change management activity. And I think our experience has been more successful when we play to their strengths. And what I mean by that is instead of just, you know, focusing on what they can't do, because they're, for whatever reason, they may not have been, I'll call it classically trained, at a management academy or school at another large company, but mm-hmm. playing to their strengths, determine how and where they create the most value for the company, determine and discuss where they have the most passion. And we've found that often, founders like to dabble in everything, but there's founders, and I can say I'm similar. There's certain areas I like to play in. Founders often, are technology geeks. They love working with products. They love working on the stuff that they make and ship. There's those that work that are better, that, just really thrive, and they really, their passion and their greatest value to the company is their customer and account relationships. And then there's those that are, they're just these crazy strategic visionaries, that's where they, they align people, they are very motivational, and that's where they create, the most economic value for the company. From our experience, double down on the areas that they can add the most value and where they're the most passionate. In other words, that's where you steer their attention. So rather than trying to make the person who just loves product and technology try to turn them into something they're not, let's say financial acumen, you beat them because they don't understand cash flow or the balance sheet or whatever it may be. Our experience is make the founder CEO encourage him or her to be more involved in product strategy, mm-hmm. more involved in product roadmap and technology and innovation and things like that. The founder who really generates the most value or is most passionate and engaged around relationship building and the key accounts that they manage, have him be the key account guy or the key account manager or something like that. Yeah. And those, the founder that may be the visionary strategist that I alluded to earlier, maybe their best role going forward is having them on the board of directors as opposed to actually running the day-to-day of the company. So founders do like to learn, and I'm not saying you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but I think you can be more successful getting them to focus on areas that they quite frankly will add more value, but also be more excited and quite frankly probably a better advocate of.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, Dan. It's definitely, like you said, it's not an easy transition. You know, the founders want to be a part of everything. They want to continue to be the driver of the growth. But I think when this transition goes on, it's really hard for them to be able to sit down and realize, well, you're not necessarily being pushed out for something better, but your role is going to be kind of reversed, and we're going to transition you into something else where you'll still add value, but not in the driver's seat. So it's interesting to think what their mindset is going to be like when all this goes on. Because are they wondering, oh, this is better for the company, or oh, this is worse for me? You know, it's kind of like a little mixed bag of emotions for them. Well, Dan, that was a really significant conversation going into, you know, working with founders and, you know, the transition with CEOs. So, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me and, you know, delve into this important topic.
Andrew, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate the time. I think, you know, working with founders, CEOs is certainly a very prevalent practice and experience for many private equity and venture capital investors and human capital executives. And it's, you know, it can be challenging because many founders are very passionate and emotionally attached to the company that they've begun. But with the right planning and you know, some of the right focus and tactics, it can be a very rewarding experience, not only for the founder, but also the investment community.
Yeah, and you know, we really went deep into that transition and how it could be a successful transition. So, you know, it was a great conversation, and I know there's going to be a lot of definitely a lot of engagement with this topic. So, you know, again, thank you, Dan. And, you know, I really look forward to conducting another one of these podcasts with you.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, alongside Dan Hawkins, founder and president of Summit Leadership Partners, I'm Andrew Mitchell, and this is Talent Talks.